Welcome back to the Real Talk with Dana podcast, where we talk all things nutrition, health, fitness, and mindset with a healthy side of sarcasm. I'm your host, Dana Montes of Real Food with Dana. I'm a nutritionist and body image coach, teaching women how to heal their relationship with food and their bodies, ditch the diet cycle for good, and truly thrive with real food, one delicious meal at a time. A big thanks to Just Thrive Health for sponsoring today's podcast. Yep, you heard it. We have a new sponsor. So Just Thrive Health is the first spore-based probiotic and antioxidant supplement available on the retail market that arrives 100% alive to your intestines. So use the code DANA10 for a 10% discount off your order at justthrivehealth.com. Hello, hello, hello. I'm back from Bali. I hope you missed me. Well, actually, I didn't really leave at all because there was a new episode for you guys every week. Anyway, welcome back to the Real Talk with Dana podcast. I guess welcome back to myself, to the United States after being in Bali for 2 weeks. I am currently working on some videos, a podcast, a blog post, all the things for you guys to talk about Bali. But today, we are going to be talking about probiotics and prebiotics. And we are going into many of the questions that got you guys submitted over on Instagram. I got a bunch in my email. You guys have a lot of questions on probiotics, and completely understandably, because the waters are so murky in the research, in the media, in scientific literature, in all of the things about probiotics. So in today's episode, I'm trying to make sense of all of that stuff for you, knowing that the research is also completely evolving every, not only couple of years, but every couple of months. So I'm going to tell you what I was able to discern from the research that's currently out there. I'm going to tell you about some new research that came out last year that's basically turning everybody topsy-turvy. But again, I'm going to tell you what's out there right now, while keep an open mind that some of this information might not be 100% accurate in a couple of months or in a year. So if you guys have studies, or if you have new information on probiotics or specific strands of probiotics that you think, hey, Dana would like to add this to her article, that would be great. So anyway, today we are going to be talking about, what are probiotics and prebiotics? What do they do? Who might need them? How do you know what kinds to get? How much do you need? How often you might want to take them? Refrigerated versus shelf stable, all of the things. And like I just said, a couple things to note before we get started. I'm also not the number one expert in probiotics, or even number 10, and probably not even number 100, because there's constantly so much new research that it's hard to be a if you want to call it like a high level expert, unless you make it your job to specifically only research about gut health and probiotics and not much else. That being said, just like my olive oil and kombucha posts for you guys, I did do a lot of research on this so you guys wouldn't have to. Honestly, I'll probably have to constantly update the show notes for this, which I'm also turning into a blog post. So if you go on my blog, all of the information contained in this podcast will be turned into a blog post, so you can go back and reference it without having to listen to the show as new research comes up. And if you guys find any really cool cutting edge research on probiotics or prebiotics for certain health conditions, please send it my way. Yep, you heard that right. This is my first official sponsor of the show. So here's the thing, because I know you probably hear a lot of different ads and sponsorships on other podcasts and stuff, and sometimes they get completely annoying. So here's the thing. This show has been ad and sponsored free for almost 2 years now and almost 100 episodes, and it's frankly getting to the point where I need to be able to support the show monetarily so I can buy new equipment to make better quality audio for you guys, to potentially hire someone to help with editing, because this is a one-woman show over here, and just getting some general upgrades without making my life and my bank account a living hell. So my promise to you guys is multiple fold when it comes to these sponsorships and ads and stuff. I promise to only find sponsors that I enjoy and support their brand's mission and products, ones that I think you will enjoy and will actually be beneficial to your lives, and that are also relevant to the show. Because don't you just hate those podcasts that, look, no shade to them, but I get really annoyed when I'm listening to a podcast about about a specific topic and then they have an ad that is completely irrelevant to what they're talking about. Like, why is your show about, I don't know, fiction books and you're advertising like men's razors and mattresses? Anyways, I digress. So if you've ever been wondering how you can support me or support the show, this is a great way to do that in a very small way that can also get you some sweet discounts if you are interested in the brands that I happen to be talking about. More thing before we get started talking about probiotics, but I promise this is related. So a general PSA on supplements that you guys have heard me talk about before. Supplements, dietary supplements, are not regulated by the FDA. In the US, probiotics can be regulated either as a food ingredient, as a supplement, or even as a drug. Most of the time, probiotics are sold as dietary supplements, which means that they don't require FDA approval before they are marketed. This is where the waters become murky. How do I know if it's actually good? What do I look for on the label? So the best thing that you can do here is look for a third-party independent lab-tested product that has been assured for its quality, potency, and purity so that you can ensure that you're getting what is advertised on the bottle. And I like using sites like Labdoor.com, Emerson Ecologics, and Fullscript that do their own testing. So do your research and double-check your labels too. We also want to talk about why probiotics are even important in the first place. So our bodies are made up of about 10 trillion cells. Your microbiome includes bacteria, viruses, and fungi that live inside and outside our bodies. And our microbiome cells actually outnumber the number of human cells that we have by a factor of 10. So we're actually more bacterial than we are human, which is kind of gross, but definitely really enlightening when it comes to what we should be focusing on when we develop health issues. Because the microbiome is not only responsible for whether we get sick or not, how strong our immunity is, whether or not our digestive system is working optimally, but it can also affect our mental abilities and tendencies. Example, a tendency towards anxiety or depression, or our cognitive function, our food cravings, how we break down and tolerate certain foods. It's a lot. And this is exactly why we need to be talking about probiotics, because we're so much more bacterial than we are human. And sometimes we need more of certain kinds of bacteria in order to help balance things out. So what are probiotics in the first place? As defined by the WHO, or the World Health Organization's, probiotics are live microorganisms that, when administered in adequate amounts, confer a health benefit on the host. So let's break that down a little bit. So probiotics are live microorganisms that, when are eaten in specific amounts or adequate amounts, meaning you have to have enough of them, will confer a specific health benefit. So they are health promoting to the host. We are hosts when we take probiotics. And so then, in order to be effective in providing some of these health benefits that I'm going to list soon, probiotics should survive passage through the stomach and the small intestine to reach the large intestine so that it can help colonize the small and large intestine and the bacteria that live there. It should produce short-chain fatty acids from dietary fiber, also known as prebiotics, which we'll get into later. Maintain a colonic pH of about 6, aka when they get to and pass through your colon or large intestine. They should also prevent adherence of pathogens or parasites, candida, yeast, all the things to the microbiome. And then they should also adhere to human colonocytes or help repopulate or recolonize them. So colonocytes are the cells of the large intestine. This should also be happening in the small intestine. And then the combination of pre and probiotics has been shown to be preventative or reduce the severity and duration of diarrhea and also IBS and many other things. So now we're going to talk about who may need probiotics. But also, if you couldn't tell already, we're going to be talking a lot about poop today, just so you know. So get ready to get squeamish. So there are thousands of studies documenting the benefits of probiotics, including skin health, gut health, metabolic and cardiovascular health, women's health, performance and muscle recovery, brain health, basically whole body health. You need these things for everything. But that doesn't always mean that you need to be taking probiotics. We're going to get to that later. So some of the main benefits of probiotics, which by the way are already living in your body, include helping modulate the immune system and keeping pathogenic organisms like parasites and viruses and yeast overgrowth in check. So who in particular may need supplemental probiotics? Anyone dealing with or having a history of, and get ready, I'm going to read all of these, mood disorders like ADHD, depression, because of the gut-brain connection, there are 90% of your serotonin is made in your gut. So also if you have any kind of anxiety, we want to be working on gut health. So atopic conditions like food allergies, true other non-kind of food allergies, eczema, asthma, digestive issues, obviously, all of the things. Constipation, diarrhea, belching, gas, bloating, coated tongue, chronic inflammation, IBD, IBS, diverticulosis, GERD. There's also an increased need for probiotics in pregnancy. Chronic infections may also do well to be supplemented with probiotics, whether it's a digestive infection, it's a vaginal infection, whether you got an infection from traveling outside the U.S., autoimmune diseases, food cravings, binge eating. If you currently eat a standard American diet, then probiotics could be super helpful for you. There's also a whole nother category of people. If you have a history of using antibiotics frequently, they may have completely decimated all of your gut bacteria and you're left kind of with like a blank check, which the problem with that is that there are now no good bacteria to fight off any opportunistic organisms like parasites or bad bacteria that might come in. So you might also need probiotics. Also, if you've had any kind of food poisoning from undercooked meats or exposure to those kinds of pathogens, inadequate fiber in the diet, because fiber is a prebiotic that you need to feed the probiotics. Again, we're going to go into that later. If you don't have a gallbladder, if you have low stomach acid, if you have lactose intolerance. So basically, there are a lot of different situations where supplemental probiotics may be helpful for you. Disclaimer, in all of this, I'm not telling you exactly what strand of probiotics to get, exactly what kind, exactly how much you need to be taking. That should all be determined by you working with your qualified healthcare provider or practitioner, whether that's a nutritionist, it's a dietitian, it's a doctor, it's someone that you're seeing that knows your unique health history, your goals, and all of your circumstances, because you'll see this later in the podcast. There are so many different formulations of probiotics that if you go to the grocery store or to CVS or GNC or wherever you go and you just ask the person that's working there, it's like, hey, I need a probiotic. There's like a probably a 1 in 1 million, maybe 100 chance that that is the specific probiotic that's going to work well for you. So I would highly recommend asking a qualified professional. Now we're going to talk about prebiotics. So as defined by the WHO, again, a prebiotic is a substrate that is selectively utilized by host microorganisms conferring a health benefit. So that means like absolutely nothing, right? In layman's terms, that means it's food for your gut bacteria that are in the gut already. So unlike probiotics, which are introducing other types of bacterial strains into the gut or helping repopulate certain bacterial strains in the gut, prebiotics are most commonly non-digestible fibers because your gut microbiome is mainly in your intestines. So you want those fibers to be able to pass through your acidic stomach environment to get to the good gut bugs in the small intestine to feed them. So the most common types of prebiotic foods are fibers and ones that are hard to break down for the body so that they can pass through the stomach and get through the small intestine and help colonize with the bacteria that are being provided by the probiotics by feeding them. So things like green bananas and green banana flour, green plantains, cassava or yuca, jicama, cooked and cooled potatoes, as well as cooked and cooled rice, because these two things develop more resistant starch as they are cooled in the refrigerator, so pretty cool. Also, onions and leeks, garlic, asparagus, apples, flax seeds, and some obscure ones like Jerusalem artichokes and chicory root. And this is also not an exhaustive list. And remember, I'm going to put this in the show notes too, so you don't have to write all that down. And then the most common types of prebiotic supplements, so not coming from foods, are, get ready for this, fructooligosaccharides, also known as FOS, which are the F in FODMAP, inulin, galacto-oligosaccharides, also known as GOS, and partially hydrolyzed guar gum, so PHGG. See, even I have trouble saying these things too. So those are the difference between prebiotic foods and prebiotic supplements. In general, we would all do better, except with certain digestive health conditions, to eat more fiber to regulate your bowels and to eat more prebiotics to help with the probiotics that are already in your system. Most commonly, prebiotic supplements are going to be recommended to people who are trying to recolonize their gut bacteria or who have low levels of gut bacteria so that you can feed those in higher therapeutic doses rather than just eating prebiotic foods. And then I guess I didn't talk about probiotic foods, but I have a whole post about this. So I did a whole post about kombucha 101, and then other things that are included in the probiotic foods list are fermented foods like sauerkraut, refrigerated pickles, fermented cabbage, other kinds of fermented vegetables, kimchi, natto. What else am I forgetting here? Really anything. Oh, right. Duck, kefir or kvass. And then like fermented dairy products. But if you don't do well with dairy, then maybe yogurt is not the best probiotic source for you, which is totally okay. Now that we've done like the general health information, I'm going to take a lot of your questions from Instagram. Here, we're mostly talking about probiotics. I'm not going to be talking about prebiotics as much. And you're going to hate this answer, but the answer to many, if not all of these questions are, one, it depends, and two, work with a qualified healthcare provider to determine what is right for you and your unique condition and circumstances. Because if I recommended one or even two or three strands of probiotics in these specific amounts to everyone, it might work for three of you, maybe 6, 12, 14, 20, but not all of you. And it would be irresponsible of me as a practitioner to recommend that because that would just be incorrect. So if there's anyone out there who's saying, this is the one probiotic for everyone, that's probably wrong. And they're probably trying to sell you something. So just keep that in mind. Okay, first question from Instagram. How do you know what probiotics you need? If anything, how much should you be taking? Haha, you're gonna hate me. It depends. So when you're looking at studies, you can see therapeutic benefit, depending on the health condition, of anywhere from 2 billion CFUs to 3.6 trillion CFUs at very high doses of one product that's called VSL3, which is an extremely high potency probiotic medical food. So CFUs is the unit of measurement for probiotics and is colony forming units. And more does not necessarily equal better in probiotic dosing. In a generally healthy person, you might want to start as your like daily dose of between 10 and 30 billion CFUs daily. And you might want to start low and you work your way up to there. If you take a high dose of a probiotic, or even if you just take, you know, one 10 million or 10 billion, sorry, CFU probiotic, and you notice a lot of gas and bloating, you might just have to work your way up to that. If you work your way up to that and you're still experiencing that gas and bloating, that's a really good indication that there is an imbalance in your gut bacteria and there's some underlying health condition that we're going to need to work on. Or your gut just hasn't had probiotics in a really long time and you need to repopulate it. Or you might need a different strand or different specific strands based on your unique snowflake of a composition. So what are the different kinds of probiotics? When you see a probiotic listed on a label, it should have three different like names, basically. The first one is the genus, the second one is the species, and the third one is the strain of the probiotic. So really commonly, you're only going to see one or two names. So you'll see Lactobacillus is a really common one. So Lactobacillus would be the genus. A lot of times people will see Lactobacillus acidophilus, which is commonly found in yogurt, but that's not actually listing the specific strain of that Lactobacillus acidophilus. So here's an example. Lactobacillus rhamnosus GG can help in preventing antibiotic-associated diarrhea, C. diff treatment, and promoting intestinal barrier function. But different Lactobacillus species and strains can help with different things. And even the various strains of Lactobacillus rhamnosus are completely different than Lactobacillus rhamnosus GG specifically. So I also found a fantastic article on why probiotic strains are important and the best probiotic strains on the market. So I'm going to include that in the show notes for you guys. And then what about how often should you take them? Can you take them temporarily, or do they need to be a part of your daily routine? Should you take them in the morning, and should you take them at night? Should you take them with food, or should you take them without food? So again, it depends. Sorry. A lot of the time, when you get a good quality probiotic, it will tell you if you should take it with food or without food. If you want to see effectiveness in a probiotic, it's not like a one and done type deal. Normally, you need to take them on a daily basis for a couple of weeks, if not a couple of months, depending on where you're coming from, in order to see either a reduction in the symptoms that you're looking for, or better bowel movements, or whatever it is. And then, what should you do if you can't handle taking them? So one of the listeners asked, like, what if you have stomach pain or disaster pants? Which I love that. Thank you for using my lingo. It's great. So if probiotics make you feel worse every time that you take them, or, and this includes probiotic foods as well, this might be an indicator, like I said before, that something else is going on. So for example, in SIBO, or a small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, if you eat probiotic foods or if you take probiotics and they give you severe bloating, that's not going to end well. It's because the beneficial probiotics that you're taking are not beneficial for you because they're good for the SIBO. So they're feeding the SIBO and they're making you have disaster pants and a lot of bloating. So that's not a good condition to have. That's a situation where you need to see your healthcare provider because SIBO sucks and it's really hard to get rid of. But that doesn't mean that you automatically have SIBO if you have gas and bloating. Please don't say that I said that. There are plenty of other health issues that you might see if you are having a lot of continued issues with taking probiotics. Or like I said before, your stomach might just not be used to them. What I would do is start with a much smaller dose and see if that still gives you issues. If it does still give you issues, try a different strand. If that also gives you issues, then we definitely have a problem going on. And then the next logical question is, how do I know if I am benefiting from the probiotics? So this also depends. Haha, you're going to hate me by the end of this. So you want to think about, what are the benefits that you are trying to get from taking the probiotics? So if your digestion is irregular, if you don't go at least once a day, if you have diarrhea or if you have constipation, you want to tend more towards, with the diarrhea, you want to tend towards more firm stools. With the constipation, you want to tend towards going to the bathroom more, having more bowel movements, and having complete and softer bowel movements. So those are things that you can look for. And then if you're looking, for example, for improvements in skin health, if you have a lot of acne, if you have cystic acne, hormonal acne, you can look for improvements in that. I will say the difference in digestive habits will be noticeable sooner than it will be in your skin composition, just because it takes a little bit longer for that to happen. Time for a break with talking about all this scientific jargon and stuff and probiotics. Wait, just kidding. Because today's show sponsor is a probiotic and prebiotic company too. So here's the Earth. That's a pretty sweet Earth, you might say. No, just kidding. So we've been talking a lot about probiotics today, and you're probably wondering, what kind of probiotics do you actually use, Dana? Well, let's say you're about to go on a tropical vacation to a country that has a questionable water supply. Actually, you know it's not clean and you're not allowed to drink it. And you're also not sure about how safe or sanitary the food is going to be when you get there, or how well your stomach may or may not hold up to it, given your past of getting a parasite when you went to the Dominican Republic 4 or 5 years ago. Oh wait, I'm talking about me. This actually happened to me. And so say you have all of those things going on and you're getting really stressed about it. You don't want some GI issues to ruin your amazing 2-week tropical vacation getaway to Bali. And you also don't want to be constantly anxious the whole time worrying whether or not something is going to wreck your gut health and your digestion during your vacation, because that kind of takes you out of the moment of enjoying your beautiful tropical vacation, you know? So what can you do? Well, a big part of what I did before my recent trip to Bali to build up my gut health was to do that and taking probiotics from Just Thrive Health before, during, and even after going on the trip. So I've been taking them for a week since I got back with a very high quality probiotic. And now that you've been listening to the first half of the show, you probably know that it's important to get a probiotic that's actually going to survive all the way through to your intestines instead of when it just hits your tongue and when it's going through your stomach. So getting a soil-based probiotic is a good way to do that. And Just Thrive Health has exactly that one. And they are also shelf-stable, which means that it doesn't have to be refrigerated, so it's really easy to travel with, which is great. And so they not only have probiotics, but they just came out with a line of both prebiotics and vitamin K2-7, which is a specific subtype of vitamin K2 that is essential to support a healthy heart, healthy circulation to your brain and your bones and your nerves and all of the good things. So aside from all of that, all of their formulations are all natural, non-GMO, and made without soy, dairy, sugar, salt, corn, tree nuts, or gluten, basically free of all of the allergens and things, which is obviously important to me as someone who has celiac and still struggles to digest dairy sometimes, because you don't want your probiotic and prebiotic supplements, which you're taking to improve the health of your gut, to actually give you gut issues, because that would kind of defeat the purpose now, wouldn't it? So if you're interested in improving your gut health, or if you're either preparing for a trip or coming back from one and just need some help, be sure to check out justthrivehealth.com and use the code DANA10 at checkout for 10% off of your purchase. And now let's get back to the podcast. Okay, now we're going to talk about when are probiotics the most useful. And here's also when the waters get a little murky. So let's talk about antibiotics, because what happens when we take antibiotics? Break the word down. Antibiotics means living organism, right? So anti-living organism means when you take an antibiotic, it's going to wipe out a lot of your gut bacteria. If you take a broad spectrum antibiotic or multiple rounds of a broad spectrum antibiotic, then you're looking at pretty much like an atomic bomb in your intestines that wipes out a lot of your gut bacteria. There are a couple of issues that arise with this. If you don't repopulate with good gut bacteria soon, or allow your body to heal and all of those things, that means it's an opportunity for bad gut bacteria, and I say, you know, bad in quotes, meaning parasites or pathogens, viruses, other kinds of illnesses, to come on in there and be like, this is my turf, I'm not letting the good guys in. And then basically it turns into like a no man's land standoff, and you start having gas and diarrhea and bloating and all of the things, and then you start manifesting other symptoms, and basically it sucks. So the answer to the question of should I be taking probiotics with my antibiotics, or should I be taking probiotics after my round of antibiotics, used to be a resounding yes. Not necessarily anymore. So there has been a lot of research on different various strains of probiotics like Saccharomyces boulardii, Lactobacillus rhamnosus GG, like I mentioned before, and VisiBiome as being extremely effective in preventing antibiotic-induced diarrhea and preventing patients who went on antibiotics from an overgrowth of yeast like Candida or other opportunistic pathogens, again, yikes, bad bugs, colonizing the gut following a round of antibiotics. However, so last year, a pretty big study came out that really shook up this industry. And Chris Kresser went into great detail on a podcast on this meta-analysis, which is a research study, that came out last year talking about how probiotics, following a course of antibiotics, specifically two broad-spectrum antibiotics that are commonly prescribed for the treatment of parasites that are known to basically carpet bomb your microbiome, may actually delay the recovery of the microbiome for up to 5 months, not enhance it when compared to a control group that took the antibiotics, but not the probiotics following the antibiotics. But before you freak out, there are a lot of holes in this study too. For one, it hasn't been replicated yet, so we're not sure if this will actually happen again in a controlled environment or not. And then we also don't know what the findings would have been with different antibiotics, with a different probiotic combination, et cetera. So we can't say for sure just based on this study that taking probiotics following antibiotics isn't helpful at all or is harmful for the microbiome. It really just means that we need more research, and you can't say that yes, 100% of the time with every single antibiotic that, you know, probiotic, very vague general term, is going to be very helpful in repopulating your gut bacteria to where it was before you took the antibiotics. Personally, with most of my clients and in my personal life, if I am going to be taking a round of antibiotics, I am definitely going to be taking something like Saccharomyces boulardii or Lactobacillus rhamnosus GG, because I know that it's helped me personally before. However, again, that's something that you should talk to your qualified healthcare professional about. So what you can do, though, and this is a general recommendation, post-surgery, post-antibiotics, post-gut issues, and then taking antibiotics for those gut issues, I would definitely include probiotic-rich foods like kombucha, sauerkraut, kimchi, fermented vegetables, pickles, refrigerated, to help rebuild the good gut bacteria after taking antibiotics, because let's be honest, nature knows best. Okay. Hope this hasn't been like too much scientific jargon for you. I'm really doing my best to break this down in an easy to understand way. So would love your feedback on this podcast on whether I did a good job of that or not, because I plan on doing more episodes similar to this in the future on different kinds of things, depending on what you guys want to learn about. So let me know. Now we're going to talk about the types of probiotics. So what about refrigerated or shelf-stable probiotics? Are the ones that are refrigerated always better than the shelf-stable ones? How can you travel with them if they have to be refrigerated? The easy answer to that last question is travel with ones that are soil-based that don't need to be refrigerated. So like I mentioned before, soil-based probiotics are generally shelf-stable and strong enough to pass through the stomach to the small intestine without being damaged, which is great. So there are certain non-soil-based probiotics that, at extremely high potencies, definitely need to be refrigerated to maintain that potency. Like, okay, imagine if you're shelling out, which some people do, $100 or more on a bottle of probiotics. If it tells you to refrigerate that thing, or honestly, even if it doesn't, I probably would, just because I just shelled out a bunch of cash on that thing and I don't want anything like heat to damage it, or light or anything like that. So refrigeration can definitely extend shelf life. So if you have one bottle for a couple of months, or you have that really expensive one, you may want to refrigerate it. Other raw probiotic cultures, like those from the brand Garden of Life, advertise that they have to be kept refrigerated to ensure potency. So that way, the company says that they can guarantee the potency is the same from the moment it is packaged to the moment it hits your tongue. But here's my question. They don't say, and this isn't just Garden of Life, this is a lot of other things, they don't say until it hits your small intestine, which is where the probiotics are working. So what happens after, quote, the moment it hits your tongue? Does it actually survive the stomach? I'm honestly still looking for a solid resounding yes or no for non-soil-based probiotics. Because according to the Cleveland Clinic, there are specific strands of probiotics that are very fragile and should be refrigerated because they're sensitive to light, heat, moisture, and oxygen, which could all damage the viability of those probiotics before they even get to the small intestine. So the specific strands of these, which you might recognize, are, I'll try and go slow here so you can hear me, Lactobacillus acidophilus, commonly found in yogurt, Lactobacillus casei, not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, Bifidobacterium bifidum, Bifidobacterium adolescentis, yes, it definitely looks like adolescence, Bifidobacterium brevi, Bifidobacterium longum, and Saccharomyces boulardii. So these probiotic strains, according to the Cleveland Clinic, need to be refrigerated so that they remain viable until they're consumed and until the person can derive full benefit from them. So always check your labels to see if your probiotics need to be refrigerated. But refrigerated does not necessarily mean that they are better. So Dr. Vincent Pedra, which I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. He's a gut health specialist and the author of Happy Gut. He explained in an interview with Crohn's.com that probiotic supplements are tested to ensure that they maintain potency through their expiration date, regardless of whether or not they're shelf-stable or meant to be refrigerated. In other words, a probiotic build as containing 50 billion CFU might leave the factory with 200 billion CFUs, some of which are expected to die off over time. So while refrigeration may slow down the loss of the live active cultures in probiotic supplements, shelf-stable probiotics should have enough cultures to stay fresh at least through the expiration date on the bottle. So he also argues that probiotics requiring refrigeration may actually be less effective than the ones that say they should be refrigerated. And I've also heard this from a few other sources, including the sponsor of the podcast today before I ever agreed to work with them. So they say that if the cultures can't survive at room temperature in the grocery store, how are they going to survive the 98.6 degree internal temperature of our bodies, let alone a pH of 1.3 in the stomach? So I, for one, would love to see more research on this. Again, there's evidence on both sides. I'm not sure what the answer is. So then what about soil versus spore-based probiotics? So spore-forming or ground-based probiotics that are not soil-based may be more effective than others because the endospores, meaning spore-based, that either encapsulate or protect the strains are highly resistant to the pH of the stomach acid, which may result in a higher delivery output of the probiotics to the small intestine. Again, more research to be done here too. I'm sorry if this podcast is confusing you guys more than giving you information. Oh man. I totally understand if you need to pause this podcast at any point and take a break and take your dog for a walk and not listen to all of this scientific stuff. However, I am going to create this as a blog post also, and I'm going to post all of this stuff in the show notes so you guys will have it too, so you can always come back to it. And heck, you can always pause the podcast and come back. So then what about probiotic supplements versus probiotic foods and fermented foods? Is getting probiotics from your food enough? It depends. Haha. I would say for a generally healthy person, yes, it is enough to get probiotics from foods, except with certain health conditions or times in your life when your gut needs a little bit more health. See above with the like 30 different health conditions that I listed off. And my other question, which I haven't been able to find the answer to, is there's been a trend in the past couple of years, especially because I go to Natural Products Expo, of a lot of companies putting probiotics like in their snack foods. So they're basically becoming processed foods, even if they're healthier, you know, quote, healthier processed foods with probiotic ingredients. So then my question is, does that even matter? Like, do the probiotics even survive in the processing? Maybe what they're putting on the labels of the packages is like the probiotics that exist at the beginning of processing, but then what about the end? And what about the shelf life? And what about when you actually eat them? Sometimes I say to my clients, like, if you're not absorbing your supplements, you're basically creating expensive pee. And I wonder if this is the same kind of scenario, because if these companies are charging you more because it says there are probiotics in these foods on the label, say chips or granola bars or whatever it is, are they actually just creating more expensive processed food that's not actually delivering the health benefits that they say it could? I don't know the answer to that. Okay, we are getting to the end here on probiotics, and then I have a couple of random questions. So how can you find research providing probiotics targeted towards certain health conditions? For example, how to find reliable info and what kinds of probiotics to take for anxiety. So a couple of different directions you can go in here. I would recommend looking on PubMed if you know how to read research studies and look for meta-analysis or meta-analyses, not single research studies. So then you'd be able to see a compilation of a bunch of different studies to see if they've been able to come to a generalized conclusion of, yes, all of these studies have shown that this probiotic is beneficial for anxiety. And they should usually tell you exactly the genus, the strain, and all of those three names. And then they should also probably tell you a dosage. What you can also do is find a specialist that focuses on gut health and the fill-in-the-blank health condition that you are dealing with. So for example, if you're looking for someone who specializes in anxiety, you want to look for someone who specializes in gut health and anxiety, because really, if they're a nutrition practitioner that specializes in anxiety, they should also be a specialist in gut health, because there's such a huge connection between the two with the gut-brain connection. The other thing that you can do just in general is a couple of good resources are Chris Kresser, Chris Masterjohn, The Paleo Mom. She talks about probiotics and autoimmunity. A couple of books like The Microbiome Solution with Dr. Robin Chutkin, and a good general gut health book, kind of like a get started guide, is Go With Your Gut by Robin Youkilis, who is an Institute for Integrative Nutrition graduate. Okay, next question. Do I suggest pre and probiotics for IBS or irritable bowel syndrome? Yes, so there are a bunch of different kinds. IBS is probably the most frequently studied health condition in which probiotics are very helpful. And it's been shown in many, many, many studies, probably thousands at this point, that specific strands of probiotics can be very helpful for diarrhea, constipation, alternating, all different kinds of IBS. Here's the thing though, is with IBS, you want to be really careful with prebiotics, because if you have diarrhea dominant IBS, it's usually a malabsorption issue and prebiotics can actually make the problem worse. If, however, you have constipation dominant IBS, prebiotics may actually be helpful with a combination of drinking more water and eating more healthy fats that basically can act as a lubricant to the digestive enzymes, in addition to the additional fiber from the prebiotic foods. Like, try adding in the cold rice, try adding in the cold potatoes, the green plantains, green bananas, all those different kinds of things that can help move things along. In terms of what specific strands are best for the very specific health conditions that you guys asked me about, I'm currently working on creating a document based on a lot of research that I'm currently doing, where I'm going to try and compile a list of specific strands of probiotics that have been shown to be helpful in certain health conditions. Bear in mind, this is probably going to take me a while because there's so much research out there. And I'm also going to try and reach out to all of my practitioner friends and people that I've met through the podcast to get their input and what's worked well for them and their clients to try and put this list together. That being said, even when I do put this list together, if I decide to release it, you have to keep in mind that this is general health information and this is not me making a specific recommendation for you. What I would do is, if and when you find this information, you can take it with you to your doctor, your dietitian, your nutritionist and say, hey, here are the research studies that show that, for example, this specific probiotic strand has been shown to be helpful for anxiety or depression or IBS. And take it into your own hands to do your own research, because like I said before, the research on this stuff is constantly evolving to the point where it's really, really hard to keep up with everything. Like, I only graduated from grad school almost 3 years ago, and already all of the information that is out there about probiotics is changing so much already that it almost seems like a lot of the stuff that I learned in school is like, wow, this is completely different. And it's kind of unnerving how fast science and nutrition changes. Also super cool, but just means if you're gonna be a practitioner that is on top of your shit, you really have to be on top of it with the research. And then I got a couple of other questions about digestive enzymes and kombucha. I have an entire blog post on kombucha where I answered a lot of questions about it, so I will link that in the show notes. I think digestive enzymes can be very helpful for people with digestive issues in assimilating and breaking down your food. There are many different types of digestive enzymes. Honestly, might have to do an entire podcast on digestive enzymes, but in general, if you look for a broad spectrum digestive enzyme, there's going to be one that's just enzymes, and some of them have HCl or betaine HCl, which is your stomach acid, in them. This can be helpful for people with low stomach acid, but you can't recommend it to everyone because not everyone has low stomach acid, and it can actually create a burning sensation when you take that if you have optimal levels of stomach acid or high stomach acid. So do not take those unless your qualified healthcare professional says you should. So I hope that this has been helpful and enlightening to you guys. Again, I would love your feedback. You know, always love the iTunes reviews and ratings and subscribe and all the things and tell your friends, tag a friend, make it your Instagram story, all of the things to help spread the word about probiotics. But also, that's a really helpful way for you to just share your love of the show. It's a great way to help support the show. You know, even if you don't want to try out any of the sponsors that I'm going to be talking about in the next couple of months, a great way to support the show that's completely free is share it on your Instagram story, leave a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. And remember, I'm going to put all of the information that we talked about today as a blog post on realfoodwithdina.com, so you don't have to write everything down and take notes, which, to be honest, I might have if I was listening to this podcast. Thanks for listening to Real Talk with Dina. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your family and friends and share the love by throwing us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, which will help spread the word and do a small part to correct all of the fitness and nutrition misinformation or bullshit that's out there, which is only causing people to become more unhealthy. Come find me anywhere at Real Food with Dina on Instagram and Facebook. Join the Real Talk with Dina Facebook group for more support and discussion on these episodes. And come hang out over on realfoodwithdina.com for the show notes and totally epic and delicious recipes. And again, a big thanks to Just Thrive Health for sponsoring today's podcast. You guys are going to be hearing a lot about them in the future too. So make sure you go to www.justthrivehealth.com and use the code DANA10 at checkout for 10% off your purchase.